Mr. Carter, Reel 16. What happened to you next, Mr. Carter?
Well, we were close to Southampton, and on the 4th we started a march into Southampton. We stopped on the outskirts of Southampton, where at the side of the road were tents. We fell out for either a break or wait for orders to move. I went into one of the tents and I picked up a book. Well, it was a book. Not a strange book. Not a book in itself, Yes, this book was laid on the floor, and I picked it up, and I realised it was about Northallerton, my own town. Only they'd called it Northerndale, and we have a large village near us called Brompton, and that was called Rompton. Funny enough, after the war, my brother and myself worked there at this factory at Brompton, and the title of the novel was Plucking Shuttles, which were two mills at Brompton, the two linen mills. Then we fell in again, and we marched through Southampton.
Were the civilians about?
Yes, there were civilians about, because one lad said to me, he said, "They know where we're going." He said, "See that woman over there? She's crying her eyes out." Well, we got to the quayside, and we were taken out to this here, it'd be a largest ship, maybe two companies on it, or I don't know, maybe two or three companies. And we got in there, and we settled down, and I think we moved a bit.
Was it a comfortable ship? What kind of, when you say you settled down, what accommodation, what kind of facilities were there on the boat?
Well, we weren't worried about accommodation, worried about the sea.
Was this one of those very large landing craft with
yes,
the big one?
Yes, very large. Yeah, you could get a company below or a platoon below and lecture them, you see, which happened. That's when we got to know we were going to Normandy. Now, during the night, I don't know whether we were at sea or what, but Kirkpatrick got all his platoon down and told us we were going to Normandy, and he produced photographs of where we were to land. And I remember one photograph, it was a magnificent photograph taken from the air, and it showed you this here French farmer in his cart looking up at the aeroplane that was taking it, and the place we were going to land was La Riviere, and there's a road straight down to the beach, and he was coming down this road on his horse and cart. Behind him was a large white house, and it was all round, it was all white. At back of there was a minefield, and at back of the minefield was a wall, and behind that wall was four guns. The village was to the left, and there was this water tower you could see standing, and towards that was La Fleury Battery. Now, our objective, it showed on this here photo an unknown object right on the water side, and I thought it could be a pillbox, and that was to be our first objective. We were to land and deal with that. Well, you can imagine landing straight on a pillbox. If it had been a pillbox, I don't think we would have been here today. The light was out as easy as that. As you dropped with it, you only had to fire in and killed a lot of us. But you happened to be a bush scout.
How thorough was the briefing that you got on the boat?
Very, very well done, it was. Because you were able to recognise everything, you know, from this photograph.
Were minefields pointed out to you, and as you mentioned actually that there were minefields?
No, pointed out to us, found that out later.
What about the things that they expected you to meet on the beach and in the water on the beach, the various obstacles there, were they pointed out to you?
No, they weren't pointed out to us, but they were there when we landed. But,
so you weren't aware?
This was the 4th.
Yes, this is the 4th of June.
No, it was cancelled. At the next briefing, they said we weren't to worry about the White House. The Air Force had been over, and it was no more. Right. So we set off.
But just before you set off, it was cancelled. That must have had an effect. I know you must have been keyed up, ready to go, and then all of a sudden, anticlimax.
Yes, it was disappointing in a way, like I said. I think we got to the pitch where we wanted to see it finished. It had gone on too long. I think everybody was in the mind, well, there's going to be no peace, or we're not going to get back to Suez Strait until this is finished. And that was a body blow.
Were any notable people there to see you off onto your landing craft?
No, nobody.
The day of the 4th, or at least the day that you were, it was cancelled, 24 hours it was late, it was pushed back. We were just on the boat all the time.
Yes.
You didn't get ashore.
No, I didn't get ashore. We were out on the sea.
Because by now you would know, obviously, that
we're in position ready to move.
You were going to be first ones out.
Yeah.
And would not know what, except that probably a good idea, you weren't going to, it wasn't going to be easy.
We were told by these photos.
What were your feelings then at that time? Knowing that you were going to be first ones off the boat and first ones to land on France's shore.
Well, I think we had a lot of confidence. These here sergeants who had been through it all along, and you know, gave us a lot of confidence. Especially mine. He had been through all the lot, and he was very keen.
There was no nervousness shown by people.
No.
Who knew what war was going to be like?
No, there was none. I think we'd done this invasion training that much that it was, you know, just natural.
Were you able to sleep well on the boat? Yes, you've been on it overnight.
Well, I think I don't know whether we slept or not. I think we would sleep a bit.
What were the activities? One would presume that you would be forever cleaning and making sure your weapons were. We're going to be okay. The few hours before you landed.
I was taken up with talking and talking among ourselves, and you know.
What was the talk about?
Well, anything we could talk about.
The landing itself, what you might meet, this kind of thing, or was it more home and so forth?
No, doom and gloom, like no. We were just a case of waiting and patience.
Did the padre have any prayers to say?
No.
You didn't have a church parade or church meeting?
No.
Previously?
No.
So you would sail, obviously, the night came and the engines were starting, off you went. What happened then?
Well, the next day was the 5th, wasn't it? So we had another briefing, as I told you, we told them you see the White House has been wiped out, and then Kirkpatrick said to the sergeants, synchronise your watches, and our sergeant said to him, he said, that watch will be mine tomorrow night. I mean, this is the kind of officers and sergeants you had, like, I mean, you wouldn't have then said that to an officer before, and Kirkpatrick only just left, you know. So
And he meant the officer's watch would be his before
yeah,
then.
Yeah, because it was an army watch, you see. So he said, I'll watch him tomorrow night. I could write a story about that then. But,
In what way? What way?
Well, it ended.
Oh, we'll come to that. We'll come to that, yes.
And, he said to me, he only had a small number of seasick pills. And he said to me, he said, how are you for seasickness? I said, oh, not so good. So I said, you'd better have one. And, of course, he set off then.
And what was the weather like?
Well, it was night and dark. And,
the sea, was it reasonably calm?
A bit choppy, yes. And we had early breakfast.
Did you eat well? Or do you eat well in pride?
No, I was thinking about seasickness. I don't think I ate a lot. I shouldn't have done that. But we had the breakfast, and then the orders came to get on deck, and the landing craft were at the side.
What were you carrying? The load that you had on your backs?
Well, we had the unload torpedoes, ammunition from the stern gun, and the lads were all loaded up with ammunition, grenades and all that.
It was quite a heavy load, though, was it?
Yes, especially our sergeant. He was carrying the detonators and everything. He had a heavy load, he had, which was deafening, I think.
Had you been issued with waterproofs in case you landed in deepish water?
No. Eisenhower sent his message out. I don't know whether he knew about it. A message. Wishing us good luck and all the rest of it. It was given to everyone, this message, a long message written out.
What was the response?
With you and all the rest of it, like, more than God with his life.
I was going to say, what was the response to it? Is you ready?
Well, it was well written for him to write it out. In fact, at Armistice Sunday this year, I took it to this parson who was taking the army this Sunday. I said, will you read this out? And he did, though. And he still got it. I have to go and get it off him.
is there a fear inside you, in spite of all the things, trying?
Yes, there's a... You're thinking, well, how many of us will be alive tomorrow? And,
do men tend to be quiet immediately prior to a battle?
Yes, very quiet. Yes.
Deep in your own thoughts?
That's right, yes.
So you were told to go up on deck, obviously, with all your equipment and so forth. Was it still dark at this point in time?
Yes. Started about 4 o'clock in the morning.
What was happening ahead of you on the beaches? Was there any gunfire going in, or was all quiet?
All quiet. Because we were still a few miles out. I think they dumped us about 7 miles out. Yes. Onto the landing craft. We clambered down the netting, you know.
Was that an easy job? Getting down that netting with that load on?
Yes, we did it quite easy, yes.
As the sea had quite a swell, hadn't it, at this point in time?
The old landing craft was rolling a bit, but nobody went overboard.
And you went into this three lines of seated soldiers in the craft.
That's right, yes, as we were trained to do.
Then what happened? You got into craft, and what happened to you next?
Well, they got into formation, when all the way to the other ships. It was all into formation and they set off. I think they had about 7 miles to go. And they were very quiet on my landing craft, except for one young lad. I always remember him, he was a fresh boat. He'd only be about 18, he more or less had just joined us. And I heard him say to one of his mates, like, he said, I hope I get a blighty one. That was about the only thing said up till we we knew our last support was going to be the rocket ship. It was going to go in front of us and fire its rockets. And when I heard them go off, I knew we were near enough.
But you couldn't see where you're going.
You couldn't see where they're going. Yes, the officer was looking over the top and all that. But we came into shore.
Had the barrage started then from the naval ships?
Yes. Yes.
What was that like?
Oh, it was very heartening. Oh, yes,
did it all start, slap bang on time, everything fired at once?
Yes.
That must have been quite a moment.
It was quite a moment. And then, as soon as the rocket ship had finished his wallet, and we were nearing, then they blasted up all the destroyers and warships. Yeah.
Were the planes bombing at the same time? Was the bombers coming in?
No, they couldn't. They wouldn't know where we were.
Had you any other supports with you? I'm thinking again in terms of the DD tanks and engineering vehicles which could come, were amphibious. Were there any of those supporting you? Were they there before you?
No.
There was no one on the beach before you when you got there?
No.
So immediately that ramp went down and you saw some kind of a view for the first time. What was it that hit you? What struck you?
Well, I saw all these supports in the water with the mines on top. I think the water had receded, you see, and exposed these, and you could see them. And I think one or two had hit these here. They were blazing, one or two of these, either from fire from shore or could have been hit a mine, but I don't know. But one or two were blazing. And I know we landed.
Was it a wet landing for you?
Yes.
Did you lose anyone coming off the boat?
Yes. Oh, first of all, when you said prepare to land for the picked up our weapons in the boat, one of the sergeants picked up his Sten gun and rocking our boat, and it put a bullet through his wrist. Now, he was left behind on the beach, which was worse than going forward, because he got a nasty head wound after that. I was told by his brother he got a nasty head wound. He was our first casualty. The second one was my sergeant. As I told you, he was very heavy loaded. He stumbled and he went under the landing craft. And that was the finish of him, you see. And I know one bloke after the war, he said to me, the Marines, he said, they were a windy lot, he said. He said they couldn't get away fast enough. I said, you must remember that they had the orders to get back to the other ships to bring other men in. So that quietened him down. And as I say, I followed these lads out. I was last behind the section. And I said to the lads, like, I said, where's the sergeant? Well, I said, he went under. Well, I thought, oh, that's a good, you know, that was a great, I liked him a lot.
What was his name again?
Hill, Sergeant Hill. You could trust him, you know, he'd do anything for you, any action or anything like that. I was more or less raw. I mean, he knew what to do, he'd been through all of it. Anyway, I went through this about 3 foot of water. I know there was a plop beside me. I think it was a mortar or a shell or something went into the sand. Of course, with it being wet and that, it didn't go off. So I was lucky again. And I noticed what was supposed to be a pillbox, we'd landed straight on it. It was a bush shelter. It was then that Kirkpatrick came to me and he gave me the maps and binoculars. He said, you're a platoon sergeant now. That was about 5 sergeants gone west. And he was wounded at the side of his, I noticed he had a bandage. So we set off for our next objective.
Were the Germans firing on you as you came off the landing craft and up the beach?
Well, there must have been the deck to go to the
Do you notice that kind of thing as going towards this object that you've been told you must get to?
Well, we've been told that the 49 deal was coming in support of us. And Colonel Hastings had told us, he said, you know the brigadier, Kirk Collins, he was an old Green Howard, he was a brigadier in the 49. He said, if he hung about on the beach, he said, he'll come and kick your backsides. But that wasn't to be. But we set off for our next objective.
What was facing you? Was there a seawall at all that you had to go clamber over? You're up the beach?
No, it was pretty, just a slope. We couldn't see this White House till we went up this slope. It wasn't, and as I say, we were lucky. There was no barbed wire, because we had no detonators to set it off with. Gone with a sergeant underneath. So we dumped them by the road torpedoes, and we climbed up this slope, and there stood the White House. And I said something under my breath about the Royal Air Force, which I was to retract later. We went up and we surrounded this wall, and one of the lads, he said to me, look, the Germans running through that wall up there. The minefield was at the back, and they must have had a path through it, and guns at the back.
This is the wall around the White House. So you'd gone up that road.
We'd gone up that road looking for us because it wasn't mined. And we just surrounded this one, and we're looking up at the back where the Germans were making running. One or two were running through a hole in the wall at the back. And he said, there's Germans. I said, well, fire on them. And I shouted at him like. And if by magic, the door opened in the White House, and about 12 or 20 Germans came up with their hands up like. They must have thought I was shouting at them to surrender or something. So we got them on the way back to the beach.
These would be your very first Germans that you'd come across?
First Germans, yes. We sent them down to the beach where they'd be useful, there unloading and that. Of course, I don't think many would survive because that was the worst place for me down there, like. You're better away from the beach. All the fire was concentrated on the beach.
Were they cowed, frightened, or what condition were they in?
They stood there as calm as could be. I think they were glad to be out to it. Just pointing them down to the beach and away they went.
Hollis was pretty active round about this time, was he not?
Not then, because I'll tell you why. As we came over the slope, the other platoon, which was on our right, there was a lad from Baydale, laid wounded. He'd been through all the actions, you know, and he was laid wounded. And I said, and I passed him, he was laid with another fella. And I said, Jammy B, to him as I passed. And he told me later, after the war, that Hollis came past and threw him a packet of woodbines. So he was following up as we went for the White House.
And no opposition going up that road at this time, is there?
No. What had happened when we got rid of these Germans, mate and mine went up the road to the village. But on the road, the White House was right close to the road, and there was a hell of a crater there. And so I said, sorry, Ralph, I said to myself, you were close enough to say you'd raise it for a hit, like, because there must have been a hell of a smoke of that, you know, it must have gone up. It was a hell of a smoke. And it put the fear of Christ into these Germans, they must have surrendered. They would cow them a bit. So we went up the road and we came to the first house. There was a movement in the house. We stopped by the window, we heard a movement, and we got ready to sling a grenade in, and all of a sudden an old French woman came out, and she was pointing out the sea, and tears were rolling down her cheeks, and she was I knew what she was asking, like. She was saying, is this a real thing? Have you come, you know, is this liberation? Like, I nodded my head like that, you see. And, then her old man appeared, like, he appeared with a bottle of, it was good stuff, it did warm us up because we wet through.
Calvados, was it?
Could be Calvados or something, right? But we had a good sup at that, and it sort of warmed us up. And of course, we waited for the rest of them coming up to join us. And we went through this village. And this was about the time that Hollis would be engaged with the other side, because there was a field gun when we looked through the edge. And my Bren gunner got down and he said, put it on single shot. And the two of them laid there, and he fired. Said, I've got one of them, you know. But that gun fired, and it killed some of them back down close to us. It fired, but that would be about the time Hollis took it.
And then, but you didn't see Hollis's action. It was away from your side.
He was at the other side. Yes. We were on the right, and he was on the left. You see, the company headquarters, you'd have a platoon there, platoon in front, and in three, you see. And he would be following the middle platoon, which they did. The company headquarters always followed the middle platoon.
What happened to you next?
Well, we started advancing. I think we did about 7 miles. Next move was disaster. We came to the village of Crowley. Now Crowley is down in the dip, and there's a road runs along the top. When we were coming across the field, and the road runs in front of us, and there's a church there. The tower and the graveyard, and this graveyard, and of course, I was leading the first wave. We hadn't many men then, and Kirkpatrick was coming up to the headquarters, and a few men in line, all extended line, you see, and I stopped at this side of the road. Down below was the village of Crowley. And one of the lads said to me, he said, hadn't we better get across the road into that ditch? I said, yes, good idea. So we crossed the road and got crouched in the ditch. In the meantime, Kirkpatrick came up to the left of him, and we stopped on the spot where we stopped. And unknown to us, there was an armoured car in Crowley who'd spotted us, and he fired. And he got this lad who said, I wanted a blighty one, he was laid alongside of me. He got him through the wrist. And the other one that was laid aside of me, it got him through the head. And this lad had risk, like, I said, you wanted that, didn't you? I said, get away back. And then I looked for Kirkpatrick, and they were all there dead. He got the lot. And I went over, I thought, I'll have to have that watch now, because I need it for sentry duty or anything like that, you see. And I was that sick, I couldn't bend down and take it off his body. And just, if we'd only been 5 minutes later, I think it was the Canadians or some armoured cars and others, went through Crowley And I think they went for this German airman, but it knocked him out. And the German was good enough, who was on there, was going up there as a prisoner. It was just them few minutes and he would have been on there.